thought you knew, but you have no idea. It's the Urban Sports Scene.
You listen to the Urban Sports Scene, myself, Ola Will T, and Ray Jeezy, now part of Sports Journey. Make sure you check us out at sportsjourney.com. You'll find all kinds of sports content, especially for your DMV sports teams. Subscribe to our podcast on Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, and Google Play. Just search the Urban Sports Scene. Tweet us at Urban Sports Scene and hit us up on our Urban Sports Scene Facebook page. Also join our Urban Sports Scene Facebook group. Search Urban Sports Scene, sports bloggers, sports podcasters, and sports debates. Will T.
Into our tradition of pregame.
Here's what we have on tap. We'll talk about the start of the defending champion Washington Nationals baseball season. The Nats start the season against the New York Yankees at 8:15 as part of our PG Ballers series. We will have Eleanor Roosevelt High School boys and girls basketball coach Brendan O'Connell on the show. Finally, at 8:40, Minor Football League CEO Richard Miles will join the show to talk about the possibility of the NFL forcing out Skins owner Daniel Snyder. But first, on Thursday, the defending champions, the Washington Nationals, open the COVID-19 season against the New York Yankees. Will T, you excited, man? Start to open the season.
First of all, I want to say, hold on, before we get the show started, rest in peace to the Honorable John Lewis,
yes,
passed away.
True.
This past weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Can't get the show started without
definitely
sending our condolences and rest in power to him and his family. Rest in power to him and our condolences to his family. The world has lost a advocate for equality, equal rights, and ensuring the civil liberties of African Americans and all
definitely
that are oppressed.
Definitely.
Now that I have that very important message out of the way, mm-hmm, absolutely, I'm excited. For me, it's kind of like Christmas in July, because I get the two teams that I root for or that I support going against each other to open the season. And on top of that, the Washington Nationals start the process of trying to get for going for back-to-back World Series pennant. So mm-hmm, I'm excited about it.
Yeah, I'm just not excited about any sport that starts, you know, that's doing this, having a shortened season. 60 games of baseball season. You know what I mean? That's tough. You know what I mean? Like, to kind of look at that season as an actual baseball season. I know that fans, folks who watch baseball aren't into the long season, but 60 games, though?
I mean, it's going to be a sprint. It's going to be a sprint, and those teams, you know, with 162 games, mm-hmm, you know, you're able to have those periods where you're not playing at your best, and you can lose 7 out of 10,
mm-hmm,
but you'll still be in it towards the end of the season. Now, with this, the way that the season's set up, you got to get out to a fast start, and you have to be able to sustain the pace throughout these 60 games. I think it's going to be interesting. It's something we've never seen before. Mm-hmm. And then on top of that, you have the universal DH, designated hitter.
Yeah.
I'm excited for it.
I'm excited
to see how it plays out.
You like that? I mean, I'm all into the National League.
I've always
loved the difference, like between the American League and the National League. People call me a traditionalist. That's fine. It is what it is. But I've always been a fan of knowing that the National League rules are different from the American League rules. Like, so when you meet in the World Series, you have that difference. You know what I'm saying? So, like, one has that advantage. Like, I've always been a fan of it. To me, it's the greatest thing. Well, it's the best thing of managing. Like, especially a National League manager. Of all my years of watching, like, baseball, we're talking about with the Braves in the early 90s, with that pitching staff, and seeing how teams like Toronto or Minnesota or the Yankees would have to go into Atlanta and just deal with, you know, those pitchers who could hit, and also double switches and, you know, things of that sort. I just love that dynamic. And just to have every team hit, you know, have a DH, I'm not a big fan of that.
Now, I'm a huge fan of having the universal DH. I'm not a fan of seeing pitchers get up there and take three strikes or, you know, try to get a walk or lay down a bunt. I think this brings more excitement and more offense to the game, and something excitement and offense is something that's definitely needed in baseball. As you know, the demographic starts to skew older, people who only, you know, who watch this game. This will reinvigorate the game and give it something new.
I mean, at the end of the day, like, pitchers will always, if you're a good pitcher, you can still dictate who gets pitched to and who doesn't. So I don't know. It just depends. I mean, still, there's still strategy even within that, even with the DH. I'm just not a big fan of it. It is what it is. I get like trying to bring in a certain fan base, but I'm always, and I think most baseball purists don't have an issue with the 1-0 score. Like, I remember watching great baseball games and great World Series where, like, the best games were 1-0, because you didn't know what that run was going to, when everything was going to change. You didn't know, like, all right, it's in the 9th inning, 2 pitchers going, and probably pitching a complete game, because back then you didn't really have, like, the bullpen really taking over a game. And it being 1-0 or 0-0, and knowing that, all right, somebody just got a leadoff base hit. And the pressure on that, like the amount, the pressure on a pitcher, the pressure on a defense to know they have to shut it down, because you know that 2 of these dudes are going at it. Like, and that's why I like the National League. You get that more in the National League than you do in the American League. Truth be told, I like the National League style of baseball better than the American League. And I'm a Baltimore Orioles fan.
Yeah, but see, this is the problem I have with people who claim to be baseball purists. Whenever any sport, everything evolves, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, whatever, as you continue to have for baseball to continue to have the success and to continue to evolve and continue to be a sport that people want to watch and people want to invest their time in watching, let's be honest, baseball games are probably the longest game in North American sports, you know,
mm-hmm.
Outside, you know, it may be a tie with football. But football, you know, is more of commercials and everything else that goes into making those games long.
Mm-hmm.
In order to continue to evolve the game, you need to try different things. You can still have plenty of the strategy, you know, trying to align pitchers, you know, and put in a DH, you know, selecting which designated hitter mm-hmm. gets into the lineup each day, and you know, making the changes within certain positions to maximize your chance of scoring a run depending upon which pitcher you're facing.
Mm-hmm.
So I think this is just another evolution in the game that's needed.
All right, so it looks like Max Scherzer.
Can I chime in?
Yeah,
for
go.
A minute?
I mean, go ahead, Ray. Sorry, go ahead, man.
I just want to add, I'm kind of in the middle with you guys, because I'm like Wally, I do like to see those close games, low scoring, but to Will's point, I don't want to see an automatic out either when a pitcher comes up. But you also at times get that chess match where, are you going to pinch hit right here?
Mm.
Is it too early if it's the 7th? I mean, what are you going to do in order to get your team over the hump when it's tight? So I can go either way on this, and I think that whether there are universal DHs or we're going to continue the normal baseball play we're accustomed to, I think both sides can still be happy and just be glad that the game is back.
That's true. I think baseball fans are – most baseball fans are excited this season, that you have a baseball season, that you can watch baseball. It looks like Max Scherzer will be the opening day starter. Are you a fan of that, knowing that what we saw with Strauss last season?
Yeah, see, I'm not, man. I actually am excited about this season because – at the end of last year, of course, everybody's riding high off the World Series, but there was that looming question. Who are we going to keep? Well, who are the Nationals going to keep? Anthony Rendon or Steven Strasburg? Clearly, Strauss has been your most important piece. And he, if it's not him, or I can say he carried this team in part to a World Series. So I feel like he's the cornerstone of your franchise right now. I feel like he deserved that opening day start. But knowing him, I think he's just going to use that as motivation, not in a negative way, but just use that to continue to be the best pitcher on the team. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Will?
I'm not. I'm I feel the same way as Ray. I think, you know, clearly with the injuries that Max Scherzer accumulated towards the end of last season, and the way that Steven Strasburg stepped up in the World Series, I thought that this would be the time, the opportune time for, you know, Steven Strasburg to come in and be that number, you know, be the opening day pitcher for the Washington Nationals. But Davey Martinez clearly doesn't think that that's the case. But so, you know, and Davey we trust for now.
Yeah, and I think that Davey knows his players. I think we can all look at what Davey did last season and know he has a good temperature on his on the players. And I just think this maybe it's more important and for Max to be the opening day starter than, you know, for Steven Strasburg. You know what I mean? Like, it's just probably not in his temperament to even care if he's the opening day starter or not. Obviously there's a sense, there's an honor, right? There's a sense of there's a sense of, oh, I'm that guy if you make me the opening day starter. But I think Stras knows where he's at, and he thinks he's comfortable in terms of what pitcher, the kind of pitcher he is. I mean, he knows he can be a dominant pitcher. He knows he can carry a team to win a World Series. He knows he's a World Series MVP. He's obtained that. So he really has nothing to prove. All right, silence.
I don't disagree with you.
All right, so
again, I think it's another one of those topics where, again, you can lean either way. Mm-hmm. It's not like fans are going to be overly emotional because Strasburg's not the opening day starter. But you asked the question.
Yeah, I know.
Do we agree with it?
I know.
And I think we gave our answers. You know what I mean?
But I hate you.
Strasburg, in ways, earned it. Strasburg earned it, though. You know what I'm saying? He did. he earned the right for me to be opening day starter. But again, knowing his temperament, as you kind of just alluded to in reference to Max, I think he's not tripping. I think he's going to continue the ball. And that paycheck says enough.
I know. He's got the bag. So do you think this shortened season helps the Nats, you know, to repeat? Does it make it easier compared to having a 162-game season?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Three reasons. Max Scherzer, Steven Strasburg, and Patrick Corbin.
Well, Anibal Sanchez, Anibal Sanchez games, too, bro. Throw Anibal Sanchez.
I'm not forgetting about Anibal Sanchez, but, I mean, those three guys are clearly – like, that's the top one. If you think about it, mm-hmm. in baseball, what other starting pitcher staff had can say they, you know, every fifth day they can throw out those three guys.
True. Real talk. That's true. Not a lot. Definitely not a lot.
And you think about it, if you do the math, those guys are probably going to start somewhere between 12, maybe 13 games each. And I would imagine that, you know, if these guys are going to start, let's say, 12 or 13 games each, that's probably, you know, they're probably going to get 7 wins apiece.
Mm-hmm.
You know, then you tap on top of Anibal Sanchez, and then I'm pretty sure they'll go with Eric Fetty or Austin Roth.
Yeah.
Roth is their, you know, fifth starter. You're getting quality pitching all around.
No, definitely.
That's dope. I think that's so dope that you named three top pitchers in the league, and they're all on the Washington Nationals. But also on the offensive side, you got Howie Kendrick. Of course, Juan Soto, who's a budding star, right? And you got an up-and-coming Victor Robles. Like, they got the recipe to win it. Although, I'm going to be real, Atlanta's looking good coming to the season, man.
Yeah.
Atlanta's looking real good. So it's going to be a tight race between those two teams, I think.
Yeah.
But, of course, we got to lean – towards our Washington Nationals, including your team, Wally. You know you're a fan now.
I respect the squad. It's
We've
not
adopted
my team.
You, bro.
No, don't do that, because it's not happening. Don't do that. Hey, as part of our PG Baller series, we'll have Eleanor Roosevelt High School boys basketball coach Brendan O'Connell on the show after the break. You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene.
For ages.
You dig? That's my deuces at, man.
Deuces.
You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene with myself, Ole, Will T, Ray Jeezy. And we're also on sportsjourney.com, so make sure you check us out on sportsjourney.com. Ray Jeezy, can you introduce our cool guest?
Absolutely. Ole, I appreciate it. And I just want to say I've been blessed, you know what I'm saying, to have the opportunity to introduce some amazing people just along this whole journey. And the case remains the same today. This brother that is joining our show now is a graduate of the University of Maryland. And based on what I read, like many of us while in college, he was undecided as to what his career path would be. But ultimately, he decided on teaching, which has led to him dedicating nearly two decades educating young people, both in the classroom as well as athletics. That includes coaching tennis. Wole, listen to that.
I know.
What he may be most known for is leading the Eleanor Roosevelt boys varsity basketball team to three state titles during his tenure, and he is Mr. Brendan O'Connell. Welcome to the show, man.
Thanks, man. That was a very nice introduction. Appreciate it.
Yeah, he's the best at it.
You didn't know I coached tennis, huh?
Yeah, we did. Until we read it, though. Until we read it. Because we play tennis. Like, Ray and I play tennis.
I didn't know. I'm not going to lie. Yeah. I was not aware. And I am a tennis fan. All of us are tennis fans. And Wole and I actually play quite often. But I'm also happy for you, just as a side note, because I'm a good friend of Akil Charles. And I remember back those days, you guys were so close to winning. And to see you eventually get over the hump and not win just one, in the words of LeBron, not one, not two, but three titles, man, is amazing. So, again, congratulations, Coach.
I appreciate that. And it you know, those guys like Akil's class and even the ones before them, even mm-hmm. though they weren't technically on a state championship team, man, we never would have got there without that crew. You know, they helped to get us, you know, right to the top. So, I love that crew.
So Coach, we based this on the, you know, the PG documentary, Basketball County. So, did you get an opportunity to watch that documentary? And if so, what was your thoughts on the documentary?
I did watch it. I liked it. I thought it was good. You know, I think the documentary changed a lot. That was 3-4 years in the work.
Mm-hmm.
That documentary, I think, was made for a national audience. You know, mm-hmm. I think they were highlighting the NBA guys that came out of our county. So I think most of us around here probably knew a lot of those stories already. But, I think that was catered, you know, and it makes sense to reach a wider audience. They didn't hit on the public schools too much since they just tended to focus on the NBA guys.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of us public school guys were a little disappointed in that. And I think, yeah. The documentary changed a little bit at the end when Kevin Durant got involved. That was 3 or 4 years in the beginning. Mm-hmm. They didn't hit for it. I think originally they were planning on focusing a lot more on, you know, the public school aspect, and then and then things changed at the last minute. But overall, it was well done.
So because it's funny because we were talking about that on a prior show, and about how we would like them to focus on some of like the high school battles, the high school rivalries back in the day, or even, you know, not too long ago, maybe even 10 years ago, or even currently some of the battles, some of the rivalries, and we wish they kind of focused on it. Because again, PG high school basketball is one of the more competitive basketball competition in all the U.S. to be honest with you.
Right. I mean, without a doubt, man. You know, hey, maybe you guys should make one and make it for a local audience. You tell me that wouldn't kill around here, right? If you did, did some of the battles in the 60s and 70s and 80s and 90s, 2000s of PG County basketball, I don't know how much, I don't know how much across the country they would get into, like, you know, Gwynn Park and Fairmont or Roosevelt Oxon Hill, but yeah. I think around here, man, I think people would eat that up.
So who was your rival? Who would you say is Roosevelt's rival?
Well, you know, I mean, our it's changed over the years. Obviously, when I first started, I knew you guys had who'd you have? You had Delonte on a couple weeks ago,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, Delonte Hall.
Obviously, that Roosevelt Oxon Hill rivalry was real big when I started.
Mm.
Lately, Roosevelt Wise is huge. Bowie's been big games. Bowie and Roosevelt are kind of natural school rivals.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you guys have been out to a Bowie Roosevelt game lately, but those things are usually sold out during the JV games.
Wow, every Roosevelt game I go to, like, you guys are blowing them out. I want to tell my host this, to be honest with you. So my brother and I, like, we coached Greenbelt basketball, and we went to see a couple of our kids who play for Roosevelt, who play for Coach O'Connell. And when we watch his team and how they execute plays, like, the plays you guys run are freaking amazing. Like, I want you to know that. Like, you don't see that in other high school teams, but the plays that you guys run, like, I just scratched my head in amazement just watching you guys run your sets, because your sets are on a different level. Like, your backdoor lobs and everything. So, like, have you always had that keen eye just to develop plays, or something you just had to kind of probably groom yourself to, like, being this that kind of guy to groom plays like that?
Well, I mean, I appreciate that. I appreciate that compliment. I think there's a lot of things that go into it. I mean, for real, like, if you don't have good players that can execute those things, mm-hmm. There's so many coaches around that can run good stuff, but it's getting the kids to be able to execute it. Mm-hmm. I mean, we really keep it simple. I mean, I think it helps. We don't just have a team; we have a whole program. Down from JV to varsity. Where our coaches are really consistent, and the kids get in the habit of running the same stuff year after year. I think that helps. It's just trying to pick out one or two things that we know we're good at. We can run over and over. But, I appreciate that. But, so much of it is, man, we've had so many good players come through Roosevelt that have helped make stuff like that look good.
Hey, Coach, I want to ask, how do you keep these good players in the public school system? Because we know that the long-standing notion has been, if you attend a private school and you play a more national schedule, then you'll have a better opportunity at a scholarship or D1 or even, the NBA or professional basketball, I should say. So how do you keep these young guys who are talented staying in the public school and playing their entire high school career there? Because as we've seen with many, such as Michael Sweeney, you can make the NBA even if you attend a public school for all 4 years.
For sure. We have back in a month or two.
Did we lose Coach?
Hello, Coach, you there?
Coach, you there?
I think we might have lost him.
Yeah, lost him.
Or either he got a bad connection.
Yeah, let's see.
Yeah, I think so.
Let me see if I can patch him back on. Can I patch him back on? Coach, you there?
Yeah,
I get you now.
Yeah, we hear you now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was saying, I think a key part of it is we have a good school, academically, uh-huh. Parents feel good about sending their kids to Roosevelt. I mean, I'm a teacher there. I would send my kids there in a heartbeat. It's a great academic school. I just think luckily, like, we've had enough kids go to college and move on to the next level that, they see it, right? Uh-huh. Like that, hey, you can, it's one thing to have us tell them, we got a good program, good school, but you can see if you go to Roosevelt, and even a lot of these other public schools, yeah, you can make it.
Mm-hmm.
You can go to college. You can play professionally, all that sort of stuff.
Now, as sort of a segue for me personally, I cover the NBA G League. Got a chance to see Taiwan Kinley play with the Capital City Go-Go for a year. And, yep. Based on our discussion here with Wole talking about how, you run your plays and how your guys implement the game plan, talk a bit about what the difference is between being an actual teacher, an educator first, then a basketball coach, as opposed to many basketball coaches who I feel like are kind of thrust into the teaching role because it's a requirement. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So I guess I don't really have a good answer to that. It's just always sort of been natural to me, right? Like when I started teaching at Roosevelt, I didn't know I was going to be a basketball coach there. The idea of, you know, just trying to break things down and relate to the kids, and that's just how I approach teaching. So mm-hmm. I mean, coaching, it's really the same thing.
So when did you know you were going to be a coach? Like, how did you become a coach, knowing that you were a teacher first? Like, what happened? Like, you just like said, "Hey, I'm something I want to do." Like, what sparked that imagination to be the coach for Roosevelt?
Well, when I went to college, I didn't know what I wanted to do.
Uh-huh.
I got into the business school at the University of Maryland, but you know, I couldn't imagine myself sitting at a office in a cubicle at a computer all day. So, I've always loved sports
mm-hmm.
and wanted to teach, wanted to coach. When I started at Roosevelt, I started coaching tennis, and I loved the interaction I have with the kids coaching sports. I started helping out with the varsity boys basketball team mm-hmm. just in 2004,
gotcha.
Mm-hmm. coaching JV. And, you know, a couple of things happened, and it just, you know, I never would have predicted that, but it just sort of happened.
Well, I know Rose is happy wow. about that, though. I know Rose is definitely happy about that. So,
yeah.
No, I am. Sure. But, so how, like, think about it this way. So, when I went to Roosevelt, we were a football team. We were not a basketball team. Basketball team in 99, we were just a football team. Other than obviously the stint with like Delonte Holland and Delonte West. But
yep.
you have brought this program into basically a basketball powerhouse in public schools in PG County. Like, how proud of you of that? Are you of that?
Well, I think that's one of the things that I'm most proud of is that we've just been consistently good, you know. We're not going to win it every year, but we're going to be in the mix every year, I hope.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is the cool thing that, you know, again, we've been up and down a little bit, but for the most part, we've had a consistently good team. It's not like, you know, we had one great player came through and won a bunch of games with him. So the fact that, and that goes back to what I was saying earlier, you know, that shows that we have, you know, a lot of good kids, a lot of good coaches. We have a program, mm-hmm. and you know, it may not last forever, but that's one thing. You know, you said it. I'm very proud that we've been consistently good.
Coach, this is Will. I have a question for you. You just mentioned something about a program. Tell for all of the listeners out there, or people who want to get into coaching. Can you give us a little background? How do you go about constructing your program, keeping things so cohesive, and then in order so that you've been able to get to the point where you've won 3 state championships?
Well, you know, like I think it starts with having just good people around. You know, like I've been coaching with the same group of guys since I started basically,
uh-huh.
And I don't think you can underestimate that. The, you know, Steve Seegers, Brian Hogg, Raheem Shobowale, Leon Seegers, like we've been coaching together for 15 years. Mm-hmm. You know, now I've got former players that are starting to coach with me.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a huge thing, that consistency. You know, I think a lot of programs, I guess I don't know, but I think a lot of programs, like, you know, hey, the JV is kind of like a separate unit. The varsity is kind of like a separate unit. You know, we're one big program. Like our JV runs the same stuff that the varsity does.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we hold the kids accountable. You know, we talk about tradition a lot. You know, our guys know about the guys who came before them. You know, even the guys, they, they, They know about the guys that you went to school with, even though I didn't know those guys. But we make it a point that they, you know, that they understand that. So, you know, I think there's just a lot of things that go into it. But, you know, hopefully making sure these guys take some pride in our school and take some pride in being a Roosevelt basketball player.
Hey, Coach, I want to put you on the spot, man. We got people listening from all over this area and all over the country. And obviously this documentary, it highlighted Prince George's County basketball on a national scale. And when you go to state championships or the state quarters, whatever, you play against teams from every county in Maryland. Is PG County basketball the best in the state?
PG County basketball is the best in the state. That's not even putting me on the spot.
That's what I'm talking about.
The reason we do well, the schedule we play, it's not even close. It's not even close. And that's not to say there aren't good teams from other places, but mm-hmm. Yeah, come on.
So now I'm going to put you on the spot, Coach.
I love the swagger.
I'm going to put you on the spot. So who is your most talented, the most talented player you've coached?
Yeah, see, now that's putting me on.
Yeah, I know. I know.
Spot.
Oh, I know.
Now some people are going to get
mad. They're mad. They're going to get real mad. I know.
Right. Look, I got a hard, you know, it'd be hard for me to not name, like, a bunch of names there.
Yeah.
But, you know, I will say, we have a kid that graduated in 2016 that's probably going to get drafted in the NBA in October, in Najee Marshall.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, that would be a first, at least in my time there. I know, you know, obviously DeLon got drafted and Eddie made the NBA. Uh-huh. But, you know, it'd be hard to say anyone was better than him.
Yeah, Najee was special. I remember watching that championship game up in Maryland, and that was amazing. Like, his performance was amazing.
And he just made everyone around him better. You know, looking at what he did in college, he's special.
So who would you say is the most talented player you coach against?
Awesome.
So that's tough, too. That's tough too. I mean, you know, going back my first year as an assistant, you know, we played against Jeff Green. I really haven't seen a guy take over a game like that.
Ooh, okay.
But man, there's been a list of guys recently, you know, Ronnie Peters and mm-hmm. Deion Wiley. You know, even you know, not much happened after high school, but even a guy like back in 2011, we played Akil Carr from Baltimore. And
yeah, I heard about him.
And
he was a legit high school basketball player.
I heard about him. I heard he was special.
I was at that Patterson game again. I was about to say Cofield House, Coach. Wow, that was at Comcast Center.
Right. And, yeah.
And again, you played him well. You were actually leading late into that game. Again, he was a U2 sensation at the time, though. Mm-hmm. So I love that name drop.
Yeah.
So, Coach, how difficult has it been coaching or trying to get ready for the upcoming season with the pandemic? And do you think there will be a season coming up?
It's been really hard. And I don't have a good answer to that. I don't think anyone has a good answer. I mean, anyone who tells you they know, I don't think, you know, they're just making it up because, you know, we don't know what's going to happen. I don't think anyone's going to know. You know, right now we're not set to go back to school until February. I mean, we don't have any clue what it's going to look like in February. I do know if there is a season, it's going to be different this year.
Mm.
You know, but I hope our people in PG are coming up with a plan B and a plan C and a plan D just to make sure it gets something in, you know, because there's athletics are an important part of these kids' lives. And, you know, that it would hurt them to not have a season.
Yeah, I agree. I think it will be. It would definitely hurt if they didn't have a season. So many kids, they relying on so much, especially in their senior year. Like Ray had mentioned in a prior show, like the senior year is like so important to most of these kids. So yeah, definitely. Hopefully they'll have something. They'll work something out. So coach, before we let you go, is there anything you'd like to add? Because we really appreciate you being on the show.
No, I appreciate you guys having me. I got to start tuning in now. I didn't really even know much about this until a couple weeks ago. A bunch of people hit me up when you had Delonte on.
Awesome.
And I've been checking it out. So I appreciate you guys having me on. And anytime you want to come out Roosevelt, let me know.
Oh, we will. We'll make it happen. Hey, Ray, do you want to do some video work? Can we get through some video work, interview some players?
Oh, absolutely, man. I'll even come up there with my mask on. Man, I don't care what's going on. We'll be there.
That's right. You do your shows on Tuesday night. We play on Tuesday night. Come up and do it from there.
Oh, man. Okay, XD Coach. You're
absolutely.
You're right. You're making it happen already, Coach. We're loving it.
Yeah, it sounds good. I appreciate anybody that is. You know, you guys are public school guys and just giving love to a bunch of good kids in public schools. So we appreciate that.
Oh, thank you so much.
No doubt.
Well, Coach, man, thank you. We appreciate you.
Yeah, thank you, guys. All right. Thank you, guys. We'll do it again.
Definitely. We will.
All right, guys.
All right. That is, That is Roosevelt's coach, Brendan O'Connell. Awesome guy. Runs a great system up there in Roosevelt. All right, Minor Football League CEO Richard Miles will join the show to discuss the likelihood of Snyder selling the Skins after the break. You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene.
The Ages.
You dig?
Deuces.
You are listening to the Urban Sports Scene with myself, Wole, Ray Jeezy, and Will T. And also check us out on sportsjourney.com for all your sports content in the DMV. I'm about to patch in the fellas. All right. Ray, do you want to introduce our guest?
Absolutely. Like I said, this is becoming a habit for me, guys.
No problem,
I appreciate
bro.
It. our next guest is a native of Washington, D.C. He's an entrepreneur, a businessman, as well as a huge advocate for minority communities and black-owned businesses. In 1993, he founded the nation's only professional minor football league, also known as the MFL, to provide opportunity you generally don't find outside of college or professional football. He's a graduate of Arizona State University, an NFL veteran. He's also a youth advocate that volunteers with a number of children's programs and has sponsored and coached teams in the Special Olympics. He has also supported programs for the Maryland National Parks and Planning Commission, supporting a variety of programs and various youth recreational activities. I could go on and on. And now he's a first-time guest here on the Urban Sports Scene, the CEO of the Minor Football League, Mr. Richard Miles. What's up, man?
How you doing, sir?
Well, welcome.
Glad to have you. It's about time we did this. So we got a hot topic to obviously hit on with you. It's about the Washington football team. I did not use the R word right now.
Good job.
Okay, we'll try to stay away from it.
As best we can.
Hey, before we talk about the Skins, can you please tell our listeners about the MFL?
Oh, absolutely. MFL is the laboratory of change. I believe in bringing former players from the field to the front office. As you know, the The NFL is 79% of African Americans, but we have no owners, no GM, and we have a hard time even getting a head coaching job. So that's where the NFL come in. We're asking these former players and players, you have opportunity to own a professional franchise here. You have an opportunity for GM position and head coaching, because I'm tired of seeing the glass ceiling when it comes to minority coaches, coaches of color. That's why a lot of guys coached in college should have been left, because of the opportunity wasn't they wouldn't allow for them to get an opportunity to coach in the National Football League. So that's why I founded the NFL.
Hello?
Oh, well, I just wanted you also real quick to give a plug for your shows, which includes Inside the NFL. Tell our listeners a bit about that, and when can they catch that?
Absolutely. Thank you. We come on Saturday mornings on DC Radio, Saturday mornings at 11 o'clock Inside the NFL. We also do a live a podcast on Wednesdays from 5 to 6 and Fridays from 5 to 6. Give us an opportunity to reach out. As you know, we have 32 franchises across the country.
Okay.
And we're also putting 16 franchises over Africa in 2020. We were supposed to go there this year, but because of the COVID pandemic, you know, we had to shut things down. But I'm excited about that. Thank you for asking.
Are you making leeway?
Absolutely.
No, I do have a question.
Go ahead.
Yeah, he mentioned Africa. I have a question, an African question.
Oh, okay.
No. So do you have, like, any teams or in route to in Nigeria? Are you trying to, or do you have a team in Nigeria?
Absolutely.
What I'm talking about.
Absolutely. Awesome. We have Nigeria, Ghana, Egypt, Sierra Leone. So we have several, as you know, Africa is a big continent, man. So we're only taking 16 franchises over there for sale. And the great thing about it, think about it, gentlemen. You see how many African players was taken in the first round of the NFL draft this year?
Yes, sir.
So you know the talent is there.
Oh, yeah.
So given the opportunity to own a professional franchise, American football. Of course, you know, we know soccer is their thing over there, but surprising now, football is a universal game, and you find a lot of kids come from Africa to go to schools over here so they can get an opportunity to play. But we want to bring that opportunity to them there in Africa.
Yeah, a lot of them in the Houston area, the Houston, Texas area, that they do that. They go over there.
I'm sorry?
A lot of
He said the Houston, Texas area.
Yeah, Houston, Texans, Texas area. So a lot of them moved to Houston, Texas and get ready.
Yeah, we there.
Football. Yeah, a lot.
Yeah, we there. We're in Houston, and we're in Eastern Texas. We have the Rams up there in Houston, and we have the Cardinals in Eastern Texas franchises we have there.
Awesome. And also, I had one more question.
So, brother, go ahead.
One more.
Matt, go ahead.
I know, right? I read about your community work. I wanted to know, can you talk about some of the community work that the MFL does?
Oh, absolutely. We make sure that all NFL players have to do 100 hours of community service. Also, along with our dance team members, I have some national programs. I have one of them is No Thugs, No Drugs. We have Early Youth Offender Program and Conflict Resolution. These are some of the programs that we implement throughout the DMV. And we also have we have a lot of streets. We have we adopted these roads in D.C. several places in D.C. You'll see MFL signs up, saying we adopted those areas to clean up and give kids an opportunity to get community service hours as well.
Absolutely. And that's kind of how we met, man, you know, there in Southeast at the basketball game that night. So just appreciate all you're doing. To move into our topic, there's been a lot of talk within, I'm going to say, the Washington football fan base of the NFL owners possibly forcing Dan Snyder out. What's the likelihood of Snyder selling this team?
That'll never happen. That's just like people telling someone what to do with your show. I mean, you built this show.
Yeah.
I mean, and this is your baby. So to say, because everybody's not going to like everything people do. Mm-hmm. Like right now, you know, the great thing about this country and the problem at the same time with is rights. The only problem with rights, you have so many rights, you don't have no rights at all. So when people do certain things and you say, well, man, you don't have, well, I have the right to do that. But you also have the right to say, I have the right to not be subjected to this. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's like a double-edged sword. But I don't think he's going to sell it. Why should he sell it? I mean, if I have opinion, you think about the Washington team and people talking about the logo and stuff. A lot of Native Americans did not have a problem with that, believe it or not. But then you had some people, yeah, true, some people saying, okay, it's a problem. Now, me, I'm different. I'm about people of color. I'm about our people. Mm-hmm. And I always say, stay focused and stop jumping on and helping other people's agendas. Let's stick to ours. Mm. We have too many problems now that we always veer away from what we're doing because we easy to be distracted by other things. You know, mm-hmm. the Indians never had a problem with it. You have other people saying they do. But now, if you're talking about the Washington team changing their name and logo, what about the Blackhawks? What about the Cleveland Indians? Mm. What about the Chiefs? I mean, you know, you open up a Pandora box. Is that racial? Because the same Native American name, but they're not going to change that. Mm. So I'm not saying it's right for them to, the Washington team, to keep that name. But, you know, if people really, no one's going to always agree on anything. Mm-hmm. You know that. I mean, any topic you come out with, you're going to have some people to disagree with. That's the great thing about this country. You can disagree or you can agree. So I just don't think that they're making too much of a big deal of it. And then I think some people need to stop jumping on the bandwagon because of what some people don't like. You can always find somebody that disagree with something. You know that. So I just wish they don't, you know, get caught up in that. You know, the Washington team, if they feel that they're changing now, you also got to look at, gentlemen, it's going to take a year or so to change, you know, the name of the team. Mm. So what do you think they're going to go out there with? They're just going to be called the Washington team? You know, no logo? Because they can't just do it. And if you look at, if you've been reading up on everything, it's just one guy took all the patents and trademarked them.
He might get that bag.
So he can't, where are you going to turn that?
He won't get that bag. That's
I told him, why don't you just call themselves the Washington team? I even told them they could use the Chiefs logo. You see the logo of my team, you know, the Chiefs, you know. But we don't have a Native American here, but we have two tomahawks. If you've seen the Washington Chiefs logo, then that's what it is. But, you know, that's the great thing about America. You can always disagree with something, but mm-hmm. is it a big deal? Me personally, I don't care whether we change it or not. I really don't care because I have too many things I'm worried about with the NFL, to be worried about what somebody do with their league.
Understandably so. And, you know, when it comes to this franchise, not so much has always been about the name of the logo, but more so just the culture in general that many feel as though has been created by Dan Snyder. There are an overwhelming majority of people who feel like he just failed as an owner. And this is why, in part, his team is in the position it's in. So I want you to speak a bit about not just the culture in Washington, but the NFL as a whole. You actually played in the league, and there's a sentiment that this is the culture anyway, that, you know, there are men in power who they often look at women a certain way or degrade women. Mm-hmm. It's male chauvinistic, so to speak, and many teams should be concerned because this happens across the board. What's your thoughts about that?
Well, you know, it's like this. One thing about this, first of all, Edward Benning Wynn was the most racist individual you could ever. I'm a lot older than y'all. I'm mm-hmm. dating myself. He owned Yale Laundry. He bought the Redskins. Mm-hmm. He was really racist. Dan Snyder, to me, I think, and he don't get a pass from me either, don't get me wrong, mm-hmm. but I think if Dan Snyder really want to win, I think it's the people that he put in, you know, that he hired is not a good fit.
I agree.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, everybody think he don't want to win. It's no millionaire. Okay, how much money you got? They're in the business of making money. Mm-hmm. They're not trying to just lose. Now, I think it's the people that he gets. The culture from when Joe Gibbs was here, and remember now, George Allen, Vince Lombardi started the winning here. Mm-hmm. See, the Redskins never won anything, but back in the 30s when they had Sammy Barr, I'm telling my age now, y'all. Mm-hmm. the Redskins were winning, but when you think about this, gentleman, you think when Vince Lombardi came here, he changed the whole culture. But unfortunately, he passed away as the Redskins began to start winning. But George Allen came in, and his whole system was different. George Allen said, hey, the future is now. We're not worried about 10 years ago we're going to get drafted. I'm going to win now. I'm going to trade all them draft charges for this guy here that might be a little older, but he's good enough to get it. Yeah, and the Redskins was good under George Allen. They went to the playoffs. They even went to the Super Bowl. So think about this. And then when they brought in Joe Gibbs, he changed the culture around it. But you need former players need these coaching jobs. Doug Williams is there. Doug Williams is the first black quarterback to win the Super Bowl. There you go right there. I think he needs a shot at the head coaching job. Then he can bring people in. Like, see, remember now, I'm dating myself, gentlemen. When the Redskins were winning, look at who Joe Gibbs had on his coaching staff. Look who he had on there, Joe Lavender and all them. Mm-hmm. Kenny Houston. He had those guys, man. Those are the guys that were coaching. Mm-hmm. They could identify with the players. Mm-hmm. They could keep players in line because they bringing them into their culture. And these were former players that did it. So they actually care. Now you get guys that you bringing coaching in from different places. Not saying that's a good thing, but they don't have the culture to D.C. Mm. You know, a lot of these young guys come to D.C. Most of these guys from down south and stuff. D.C., man, ain't the place to come to if you don't know where you're at. Y'all know what I mean.
Yeah.
This nightlife will
eat you alive.
Forget all about everything.
Will eat you alive.
So, what I'm saying, absolutely. So, you know, Snyder definitely wants to win. I think he really needs to get back to getting. I think if he gave Doug Williams the opportunity to coach, I know Doug will go get former players that played, that was on these championship teams, man. These guys will set the culture up. Right now, the Redskins, the Washington team, I got to get used to that. they're just all over the place right now as far as culture. Now, you bring in, and I met the new coach. I met him down at the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. I think he's going to be all right. But remember, it's beginning to turn into the Panthers, you know, 95. Because look at his staff. Most all these guys, even players he's bringing in, that play with the Panthers. Yeah. Come on, man. Now, you just changing the whole dynamics of it. But then sometimes you need change. But right. I hate when people say he don't want to win. He want to win, but you got to understand he's the owner. He's not a coach. He's not a GM. So therefore, he's trying to get people in them positions to fill that board and do what he's doing. Like me, everybody give me the credit for the NFL. But if you look on my website and you look at my front, office, man, that's the who's who of it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Jamie Duke, I had guys that played in the league. I had guys that ran big corporate America. These are the guys on my board and stuff.
Mm.
You know, so it ain't just me. You know, I mean, I'm the owner. I'm the face of it. But I always tell people, I'm not doing all this. I got a lot of people make me look good because they know what they're doing. Okay, and I think that's what Snyder needs to do, and I think people need to stop beating this man up so much, and he don't get a pass from me, but give him an opportunity, but they don't know what racism is. And as far as what's going on with that other stuff you hear about, if you was in other cities that I got NFL teams, y'all hear a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Even worse than what you're hearing about what's going on with the Redskins, really. But you don't know. Because I'm going to tell you, in the old days when I was playing, the Oakland Raiders would dare let you know. When they did the drug testing, Al Davis tell you, you ain't drug testing my players. You tell me the truth ahead of time. You know what I mean? Oh, because I was all they did up in Oakland, they won.
Yeah.
But you wasn't coming in there doing no random drug testing because Al Davis wasn't having that. You follow what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Give me a chance to get my guys, okay, we get ready to go to the job, get your act cleaned up. But when it came to Sunday, that black and silver, man, was nothing to do, was nothing you wanted to face. You mm-hmm, know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So it just, you know, the names don't bother me as much. I really don't care what they change it to, or they can leave it. But people got to stop putting so much emphasis on it. If they do not like the name Redskins, take the Redskins, take the Indian face off it, and put two tomahawks there. That's what the Washington Chiefs logo look like. Yeah, you can still call it the Washington team. And you got the logo, because if you look at my colors are the same as the Redskins, same color scheme and everything.
Mm-hmm.
So, but, you know, that's just my opinion. I'm just one person, but. You know, yeah. I think people are making too much out of nothing, really.
Well, you know what? I'm going to let you stop there, because a lot of what you said could definitely be debated. I'm just being real. You know, Dan started out. Now, look, we all agree that he wants to win, no doubt. We all agree about that. But to just kind of meet you halfway, so to speak, we'll have to have you back on. he needs to put the right people in place. And
right.
Yeah. And he has not done that. Now, I do like the Rivera hire. I do think that's a good thing. I know many have pointed out when he brought Shanahan in, when he brought Schottenheimer in, he gave them full control. But then again, he really didn't, because he just was too hands-on and he doesn't know exactly what he's doing. So at this point, with all the attention that this team is getting from a PR standpoint, with these women coming forward, which I'm glad they spoke up, and hopefully change will happen across the league, not just here. Mm-hmm. I'm just hoping that this time, especially if you're saying he's not going to lose this team, then he's got to implement change and he's got to let the process work instead of trying. I know you want to win, but you can't rush it. You got to let the process play out. Let your people do their thing. Trust your people. And so far, with all the coaching changes, we can name so many of them, including Jim Zorn, Joe Gibbs, so many coaches in this era, North Turner. It's time to allow, you know, he gave Gruden a chance. My goodness, he picked the wrong one to give a long
absolutely.
Tenure.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But, he needs some better advisors. Maybe you might be one of them.
But you know what, gentlemen? Mm-hmm. Also, gentlemen, I just want to throw this in there. Washington, D.C., the worst jobs here in D.C. is the President of the United States and the head coach of the Washington Redskins.
So true.
But it's those two jobs, because they expect the Washington team to go to the Super Bowl every year. That's not the reality of
it. Yeah, they blind.
You know, and I know, they expect them to go to the Super Bowl every year. Right or wrong?
Yeah, terrible.
Right or wrong?
It's terrible.
Yeah.
That's just the mentality here, man.
They spoiled.
That's the mentality
They're
here.
Spoiled by Joe Gibbs, man. They spoiled. I don't know why. And it's
right.
over. Joe's been gone a while, man. He's been gone. So it's
we're going to have you back on, man. We ran out of time, but Thank you. We appreciate the knowledge, man. We're going to continue this discussion. We're going to hop on your show, too. We've been talking about that for a while. You canceled your season. You did it right. We're seeing this mess that's going on with the NFL. We'll have that talk, too, coming up. But thanks for joining us, man.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
We appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
That was great, man. I appreciate that. That was great. I did want to talk about the season, though. I did kind of like why, you know, his opinions about opinion about, you know, the NFL season, you know, should they have an NFL season? Well, I guess we can talk about that later some other time, right, Ray?
Oh, yeah, well, I already know where he stands on that. So, you know, like I said, some of the things he said, like I said, a lot of people will debate it when it comes to name and all. It is significant. And Dan Snyder, we know he wants to win, but that man needs help. And we agree on that.
He wants to win, but he doesn't know how to. He wants to win, he'll know how to. That's true. We're going to leave that there. We're going to leave that right there. Subscribe to our podcast on Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, and Google Play. Just search the Urban Sports Scene. Also tweet us at Urban Sports Scene and hit us up on our Urban Sports Scene Facebook page. And check out the new home of the Urban Sports Scene, Sports Journey, at sportsjourney.com. All right. It's been a great show. Anyway, you've been listening to the Urban Sports Scene. We'll teach it there? I'll say it.
I'll say it.
Thank you. You dig? You did? My man.
Hey,
I know, right? Hey, Mac, lead us out, big homie.